One of the many myths we live with in this United States, these United States, is that the South lost. Now, of course, it's a fact that Lee did surrender to Grant, so the South did indeed lose the military campaign of the Civil War. Of course, it's a fact that slavery was dismantled, at least formally, so the South can be said to have lost in that regard as well. But in so many other ways, rather than glibly being labeled a loser, the South can be said to have become the cultural and political center of this country. You're all here. The South and Southerners are not as radically other as typically portrayed. Post-Civil War Reconstruction failed, not least of all because racist attitudes were found not only in Southern states but nationwide. And now no president can get elected without carrying the region, and therefore various types of Southern strategies have been hatched over the years by both Republican and Democratic parties. Even population density has shifted southward, meaning that more of us grow up with Southern accents than ever before. In Johnny Cash and the Great American Contradiction, author Rodney Clapp draws upon these truths as well as on the music and life of the late singer Johnny Cash to ask some important questions about the contradictions inherent in the cultural soup of democracy and religion as it's practiced here in the United States of America. In his book, Clapp points out the contradictions that reside within our communal stories and the belief systems that give rise to them by using several dichotomies, all of which are present to some degree in our national mythos, and all full of contradictions that we usually ignore or can deny or simply remain unaware of. Today I wanted to take just three of the dichotomies that he mentions in some detail. First, a dichotomy that the author Clapp calls holiness and hedonism. In Tom Petty's Southern accents, Tom Petty is from Florida, you may know, in Southern accents, the singer sings about his familiarity with the drunk tank in Atlanta in one verse, and about his pious dreams of his mama's praying for him in the very next. Now, apparently, he revels in a hedonistic behavior that often lands him in the hoosegow, and then nearly simultaneously values connection and conversation with the holy somehow, a contradiction that comes from holiness and hedonism alive together in the same life. Johnny Cash covered this Tom Petty song some 20 years ago now, long after Cash's own struggles with hedonism had landed him at times actually in jail, but most of the time simply labeling him in the popular mind as the quintessential country music outlaw. But he was his own brand of holy as well. Even during his own hedonistic days, Cash kept a contract with himself to tithe his music, recording one sacred song for every 9 secular ones. 10% to the Lord, he said, even in his darkest days. Now, another example of this holiness, hedonism dichotomy is a song that Cash covered to good effect. I think it's Kris Kristofferson's The Pilgrim, and I'd invite you to listen for holiness and hedonism in this lyric. Now, the next dichotomy is tradition and progress. Johnny Cash grew up in a very tradition-oriented setting. He was raised in rural Arkansas amid deep family and cultural traditions. Like so many other youth of that time and place, and youth from my time and place, and maybe from yours, he couldn't wait to get out. Against the stifling tradition of his upbringing, progress was in movement and often took the form of transportation to anywhere but here. Salvation was in the leaving and picking up and going without any destination in mind. So train songs became a staple in Cash's repertoire, as in so much of American music. American music, as something of an aside in this political season. Clapp uses the term American quite a lot, and I will say I'm torn about its use. I can't help but feel the elitism of this term, Americans, remembering our North American neighbors to the north in Canada. And you know, there are North American neighbors to the south in Mexico beyond that new big wall that's going to be built. Even further south in Central and South America, all of us are Americans, are we not? And still, I can't find another, a better word for those who live in the United States, because citizens has now taken on the same elitist ring as my fellow Americans used to be because of recent immigration politics, but that's an aside. Anyway, train songs traversed the distance between tradition and progress. The railroads were synonymous with progress, fueling the Industrial Revolution and linking cities with towns and with farms and ranches and eventually one coast with the other. And yet this progress came at a really steep price, the cheapening of human life and work and physical ability in the face of the impersonal onslaught of technology. One of Cash's personal favorite songs, The Ballad of John Henry, tells of a steel-driving man who heroically bests a track-laying machine only to lose his own life in the contest. This must have been the way it seemed to so many 19th century workers trying to make the shift from agricultural to manufacturing jobs. A normal person couldn't keep up with those newfangled machineries. Even if you were specially gifted, the new ways were probably going to kill you. And so this tradition of feeling like existential losers continued into the mid-20th century as manual laborers fought to keep pace with industrial advances. You know, tradition is fine until you feel so stifled you can no longer breathe. Progress is fine until technology takes your job and renders your way of life obsolete. Johnny Cash felt both these extremes in his own life, and he had a deep feeling for his countrymen and women who were suffering a similar fate. A third dichotomy, guilt and innocence. In our country's mythos, we have always, always been innocent. We're innocent. We fought a war of revolution with the British because we had to, even though our Canadian friends achieved independence without loss of life. We're innocent. The Spanish-American War was a noble enterprise, even though it led directly to a bloodier war in the Philippines a year later. We're innocent. It's not our fault that the First World War, that was the war to end all war, was wrapped up so badly that it led to a second one just 20 years later. We're innocent. The people of Iraq were supposed to welcome us as heroes. There must be something wrong with them. Not us. We're innocent. We're always on the side of right. That's the myth, anyway. In this guilt-innocence dichotomy, Johnny Cash ended up on the other end of the spectrum from most of his fellows, especially those in country music. His personal sense of guilt was solidified at the age of 12 when his older brother Jack was killed in a sawmill accident, working to support the family while young Johnny happened to be away fishing. Johnny's father, Ray, came to find him and took him back to the house to show him the ripped and bloody clothing that Jack had been wearing when the saw blade opened up his little body. Jack lived long enough for Johnny to visit him. Jack spoke to everybody else in the room, but never acknowledged Johnny's presence, a sure sign in the young man's mind of his guilt somehow, one that he never got over. Johnny would speak of having murdered his brother himself, as if Jack wouldn't have died had Johnny not gone fishing that day. This was not helped by Johnny's memory of his father in a drunken rage, yelling that Johnny was the one who should have died that day, not Jack. So in this regard, Johnny Cash was about as un-American as one can be. He grew up knowing in the deepest recesses of his heart that he was not innocent, that his life was built on the losses of others. Then author Clapp says this: maturity means the assumption of appropriate responsibility, the ability and willingness to take credit where credit is due and blame where blame is due. It means admitting and not denying our actions and their consequences and then acting accordingly. The United States is without doubt a great actor in and on world history, but nothing holds it back, Clapp says, from becoming a democracy for grown-ups as much as the myth of innocence. And I'm not sure if Cash ever sang this next song, but it was written by Steve Earle in the voice of a man on death row. It's a man who seems to be taking some responsibility for his guilt and is now facing his ultimate demise. Now, concerning our deep-seated myth of national innocence, Dr. Cornell West has observed, "We are exceptional because of our denial of the anti-democratic foundation stones of American democracy. No other democratic nation revels quite so blatantly in such self-deceptive innocence, such self-paralyzing reluctance to confront the nightmare of its own history. This sentimental flight from history, or you could say adolescent escape from painful truths about ourselves, means that even as we grow old, even as we grow big, even as we grow powerful, we have yet to grow up." Obviously, you don't have to be a Christian with a strong sense of original sin to hear the truth of Dr. West's words. Johnny Cash's understanding of his own culpability led to a sense of kinship with the underdogs of the world, all those who struggled against systems of injustice and oppression. He wrote Man in Black in 1971. So these are just three of the dichotomies and some of the contradictions that Rodney Clapp says are inherent in our culture. And these are some of the ways the author shows Johnny Cash to be an exemplar, or in the last case, a negative example of the American nation. Clapp argues that we should wake up and see the truth that surrounds us and grow up and become the citizen participants in the mature democracy that we could and should be. In this, I must agree with him wholeheartedly, even if I consider myself differently religious than he, well, with his deep grounding in Christianity and mine in Unitarian Universalism. Now, Clapp's final point concerning religion and patriotism is a good one, if provocative to those of us who find ourselves differently religious. The author, in his last chapter, explains why, in his own mind, one's Christianity comes before one's Americanness. When one's religion is at odds with one's patriotism, religion must, by all rights, be the deeper commitment, he says. Now, taking him at face value about his own religion and spiritual grounding in Christianity, I wonder what our answer would be to a similar quandary between our Unitarian Universalism and our country, our culture, our community. Clapp says he is Christian before he is American. If asked to prioritize the facets of our identities, I wonder how many of us might list Unitarian Universalism at the top, or indeed anywhere on the list. What sort of commitment do we have to this faith tradition of ours? Do we come to church on a Sunday more to find friends and to be entertained than to learn new ways of living? Do we act out our UU values and principles on Sunday mornings and then act out something else the rest of the week? Do we really practice what we preach? Or is this just a convenient way station on a journey to really nowhere in particular? I hope you're finding what you need here today. Not just what you want, but what you need. frankly, and it sounds a little bit blasphemous to say out loud, but frankly, I think it's more important that you find what you need than you accepting any sort of Unitarian Universalist faith. My own UU faith is critically important to me, but yours may or may not be to you. I don't know. That would be yours to figure out. But more than surface friendship, more than light entertainment, more than accepting one brand of faith or another, I hope we're learning together to live not just for ourselves, but for others as well. I hope we're on the path to growing, not in numbers, but growing ourselves, growing our community, growing in ability to think and feel and respond to life and to take responsibility appropriately. In short, I hope we're growing up. So may it be.